Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
Running motorsport magazine show, Midweek Motorsport. News, features, special guests, and analysis from the experts. Formula One, sports car and endurance racing, rallying, touring cars and bikes. If it has wheels and an engine, and they keep score, it's on Midweek Motorsport.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Midweek Motorsport Series 18. Episode number 37, or at least it should have been. Unfortunately, due to an issue at the main control room, we haven't got a recording of the live show. But the good news is that Tim has managed to recover the content that Nick Damon recorded at the Aston Martin Heart of Racing reveal and announcement regarding their return to the top class of endurance racing. So enjoy that at least and accept our sincere apologies that the rest of the show won't be available.
So it's another Damon's Day out, this time to the new fantastic Aston Martin Centre, just opposite the main entrance of Silverstone. And we're here to hear about an entry into LMH and LMDH. Well, actually into WEC and to IMSA. And we had a big presentation, just seen it. It's going to be a car that's based on the Valkyrie and the AMR Pro. Lawrence Stroll was there, really a prepared statement. But we got a chance to talk with the people who are actually going to be more involved in the project that's going to bring Aston Martin back to the top class at Le Mans. So with Adam Carter, who is the head of endurance motorsport at Aston Martin Performance Technologies. Have we got that complete title right? That's one hell of a business card now, isn't it?
It's one hell of a business card. So my job title is actually for Aston Martin program on the, is head of endurance motorsport, and then with Aston Martin Performance Technologies I'm engineering director. So
big announcement, exciting announcement, obviously announced today, but how long has this been in the background and what work has already been done?
So really, if you say it's been referenced a couple of times today, the program is actually probably 2019 it first kind of thing, and as Ian mentioned on the stage, it's this program has never really gone away from their perspective. It's been of interest to them in terms of it really starting to gain momentum early part of this year. I was asked what I thought. Was it possible? Could we be competitive, taking certain boundary conditions and constraints? What do I think? I went away, went through the regulation, looked at it, and started to go, actually, no, this is a real proposition. And then as I pushed it forward, looking, I'd say, real kind of knee point was late Q1, early Q2. And then I mentioned earlier, we've been working on this in the background ahead of the announcement because you have to get going. I would say that was around Le Mans this year that it's like we all stood and looked at each other in the eye and said, whilst we're not there yet, are we going to get there? And then it's like, yes, okay. Then it was, let's start putting the sort of key pieces in place and get going on.
Now, of course, Aston Martin were a key part of the original the hypercar conversations, and that car then got postponed, canned, stuck on the back boiler. Is this now a rebirth of that same concept, or has it become different because you're using the Valkyrie? Was it always the Valkyrie? I mean, are we just seeing 2019 come back in 2023? Or 24, sorry.
I'd say it's a mix. And the reason I'd say it's a mix is the AMR Pro car was born from that original Le Mans hypercar program, and then we're going to take what is the DNA of that car and evolve it into a hypercar. So there is a sort of bloodline link through all of those cars. So I'd say it links back to then, but regulations have moved on, understandings moved on, AMPT are now involved, engineering the car, etc. So it will be carrying some of that DNA, it'll be carrying some of the work that's already been done in the sort of design validation program of the AMR Pro to take all the advantages of that work already done, but then evolving it into a racing car will take a slightly different slant.
Now, obviously, actually, Aston Martin, you know, is heavily involved. But is this obviously it's not a works entry? But is it works support or is it a pure customer entry?
It's a works entry in terms of where it's a works partnership. So the program is a partnership of Aston Martin with the Heart of Racing, and it is fully work supported in terms of from Gaydon and from AMPT. It's if we're going, we're going properly, because to put the wings on a race car and go to Le Mans, it needs to be serious.
I mean, Lawrence obviously gave great thanks to the Heart of Racing team and Gabe and Ian. I mean, is this a programme that will only be Aston Martin Heart and Racing, or will it expand to other teams in the future?
At the very first instance, it's Aston Martin with the Heart of Racing. There are opportunities, if the circumstances were correct, that we could field additional cars in the future. What we really want to do is, because of the works partnership, as it is today, is with Heart of Racing, we want to focus on that because, mentioned previously, is respect your competition. There's some great teams out there, and more to the point, it's only worth winning if you're up against great competition. So it's respect that competition, and to do that, being a integrated unit together, or that's our main focus at the moment, because is not to underestimate the challenge ahead of us and to have everybody working in unison on the same sort of same drumbeat, same path all the time.
Let's talk about the work involved. You've got a fantastic AMR Pro car there, but it's got too much power, it's got too much downforce, not all the bits in the right place. Give us an idea of what you have to do to that car to turn it into a race car.
Race car's designer's dream, isn't it? Just turn it all down. So in terms of the aero work, we've been working on for some time now. In terms of reducing the load, but actually within that, you still got to look for the competitive advantages you can. You've got to look at making the car basically work on all circuit types and all ambient conditions, all three different drivers. So set the car up in a particular way and all three drivers be able to drive it the way they want, etc., is to get the sensitivities out of the car, make it nice and benign, etc., in there. Obviously, we've also got some of the regulatory work just to do with some of the other... there's the performance window, but then there's the other aero performance and requirements set in the regulations. You look at, in terms of the engine, one of the big things at the moment is whilst it's on a torque control architecture engine, it is a torque control like a road car kind of system, where throttle pedal and then the engine delivers the torque, whereas under this regulation set, doing the closed loop torque control to the drive shaft sensors, that is something the AMR Pro doesn't have. That is something which is a significant piece of work, and you can see in the competitive order of cars out competing today in the series that there's a jostling position, and from the sidelines, I think some of that is people getting on top of where they are in terms of that kind of power unit management. So, and that just shows, one, it's not easy, two, how important it is. So there's a indication there. So that work needs to be done. We obviously, you mentioned, got 1,000 horsepower we need to come down. Is that does come with some disadvantages, because you're carrying, because of, guess what, an engine for that capacity and that performance output has a large volume, large mass, so wheelbase is a little bit longer, COG is a bit higher, etc., but having a capacity overhead and the response characteristics of a V12 engine are significant.
But of course, well, just cut, you know, to talk about the engine, now of course you are entering LMH up against LMDH cars, and you have taken out the hybrid. Do you think that will end up being an advantage, or will you always be a disadvantage, perhaps only by a balance of performance, by the rule makers, by not having a hybrid part of the engine?
The hybrid opportunity gives them a little bit in terms of the mass it takes in order to... So you have the energy per stint, so they've got some regen. So in terms of the actual fuel on board can be less per stint, so the mass per stint. But that's our job, which we, again, with an overcapacity engine coming down, we can... There's things we can do to get the fuel efficiency higher by pushing the lambda higher, etc. So there's some work we can do. The LMDH, though, does come with some weight distribution compromises, some cooling. You've got more cooling system, so you've got more packaging of all the cooling system to do, which also comes with weight, comes with reliability, etc. So all race cars are a collection of compromises, and it's about which compromises you choose to take in order for the package. So I'm really happy where we are in terms of the, let's say, the beauty of simplification sometimes, especially racing. And, you know, it's, if you look at endurance races these days, they are 12, 24-hour sprint races. But, you know, still having serviceability between the sessions, being able to access and things, that's where the advantages are. You look in the modern-day racing format of balanced performance, etc. Yeah, it's about the actual stint behaviour between the three drivers. It's the race team's performance. It's setting the car up on the day and actually having a weapon that you can use and just focus on without all the complexities and systems complexities, allowing the race team to actually focus on that is also an advantage.
So the third thing, engine, yep, aero, yep. But what about the actual raceability? Because a lovely track car being swanned around is fantastic, but a race car, which someone's going to prang or be pranged into, that's going to require a massive redesign, surely, to have that serviceability.
That, so in terms of, it's quite clear on the AMR Pro, it doesn't have the, let's say, the classic LMP, LM8 kind of quick change front, quick change rear, so that all needs to come. That's, but the key architecture points in order to do that are actually still there. So in terms of the mounts into the gearbox, that's already there to do that. If you look at the nose box, it's already there to do it. So when we redo the aero package, we'll re-engineer the bodywork engineering to take into that in all into account. And when you look at, as you mentioned, as a track car, it's a two-seater track car, and one of the big departures in terms of the layout of the car when it went from being the original hypercar for Le Mans to the AMR Pro was to go to the two seats, and all the electronics that was in the cockpit next to the driver had to be rearranged around the rest of the car to make that volume. And that's one of the things we need to do, is rearrange that electrical architecture so it is within the cockpit, so it's serviceable, manageable, and get into that. So
you set yourself a 16-month target to get the car racing and competitive, which is Daytona 2025. You've outlined the huge amount of work you've got to do. When does the car first hit the ground for testing?
I would say, let's say Q2 next year, so Q2 24 is the target for it to be on the ground.
And it's, do you already have a plan of how you're going to progress the car forward, or is it like, see what happens when it hits the ground? Or do you use the experience of developing previous cars? No, we need to do this, then this, then this.
Yeah. It's we've laid out what the objectives of the test program are. Obviously, it's, we know there will be evolutions, because that's why we'll go track testing and we'll learn around the tyres. We'll learn things like with the tyres. We'll learn things with the drivers. We'll learn direct feedback from the aero package we've got. So we are going with a design spec and intent of that's the car. But we also know there will be these inputs along the way which may change the path of development.
And finally, we know that Ferrari obviously won Le Mans this year and had a huge amount of input from the Formula One team initially. Is there going to be that sort of same crossover here?
So here, as I say, I'm engineering director for Aston Martin Performance Technologies, and we actually co-locate. My desk is in the middle, so we've actually just moved around. But I used to sit next to Dan Fallows and things, so the actual synergies and understanding of the technology space, and my background as well, being Formula One for many years. So there's the, in terms of what we do here, there's multiple parts of AMPT. There's the, let's say, automotive industrial. So the automotive industrial side of AMPT are doing the body and white for the Valhalla. So all of the composite monocoque, all of the bodywork for the Valhalla hypercar for Aston is all designed and engineered from here. And then there's my part, which is more, let's say, on the competition side and kind of niche projects. And with that, I'm co-located with the F1 people, and we use some people we can mix the resource so they can contribute between F1 and AMPT stuff. And also, I've got people that have come and said, you're doing Le Mans, I've done 15 years of F1 cars, I want to go to Le Mans, can I basically jack my job in F1? I want to come and work for you and do the Le Mans program. So they've come up. So you're getting those people with the F1 development ethos experience. That's part. The other part with it is in terms of the actual resources and the infrastructure. So we have the great infrastructure here, but also if you look at the processes like the CFD processes, etc., what's used to develop the F1 car, we adopt that same technology. So all of the process at the solver level, at the wind tunnel data processing level, etc., is we adopt all of that, say literally the same software, the same code, and use all of that for our own programs.
Fantastic. Thank you very much indeed. And good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
So with Ian James, team principal, Heart of Racing, after a very exciting announcement, Ian, but you're going to have to give us the background. How has it turned up, you know, for someone who's normally racing all around the world, mostly Aston Martin, but only Aston Martin. We had even a Mercedes, didn't we, at Spa, is suddenly now partner in a hypercar program with one of the most famous manufacturers in the world.
Yeah, I mean, from a team point of view, you know, and from Gabe Newell's point of view, this is, he always wants to think big. You know, we always targeted eventually getting into the top class in sports car racing. And then over the last, you know, 18 months, these discussions have happened and we've been able to realise a dream, really, as a team. Obviously, you know, we're still a relatively young team. We still have a lot to learn. We're going to have, you know, quite a large expansion here now on our hands. But it's just exciting and just thankful for the opportunity.
We mentioned only Gabe Newell, he was also mentioned by Lawrence Stroll in the presentation. How pivotal has Gabe's input been? And is that input technical or more financial?
Well, Gabe is the backbone of Heart of Racing. You know, without his vision and, of course, you know, his financial input, you know, none of this would be possible. So he gives us the confidence to strive forward and be our best selves. And I think what he's enabled us to do over the last 3 and 4 years has shown that we can be successful given the right opportunity.
I suppose the key question, really, when we talk about how it's come about, is this pure customer racing or is this work supported racing?
I think we could, you know, categorize it as work supported for sure. It's not a customer program in the true sense of, like, you know, just go and buy a car and then it's up to you. There really is an integration, and I think you'll see over the next couple of years how close that integration is.
Give us an idea now of the work ahead of you over the next 16 months till you get to Daytona 2025.
Yeah, so, you know, as we briefly touched on, you know, from a team point of view, we have to grow the infrastructure around that to deal with it, and then we'll be track testing, you know, middle of the year 2024 onwards. But really, the brunt of the work is going to be on AMPT to produce the car, get it to the homologation stage, and ready to run.
But you'll be, I take it, you and your team will be involved in all the testing. Would that be done by, or will that be an AMR thing?
It won't be an AMR thing, it'll be an AMPT.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, a little Freudian slip. They're all close, all these synonyms. But look, I'm going to be involved from, and I have been, but I'll be there the whole step of the way. So we'll be involved intricately through the testing as it begins.
Running joint WEC and IMSA programs, do you think, you know, there's, obviously we got that terrible world of balance, performance and everything else. Will it be the same car in both series, or will there be subtle differences because of the way they balance them?
No, my understanding of the rule set, I mean, they'll be identical cars, you know, and there is no LMH currently in IMSA, but it's not through IMSA's lack of desire to see an LMH. And I think, you know, maybe this will break the ice, as it were, and we'll see more LMH cars over in IMSA. Obviously, when the car is submitted, they have a closer look at it, they use their own wind tunnels, stuff like that, but the base car will be identical.
And will it be the same team running both the WEC and the IMSA side of things, or will it be just a few people and separate teams outside the team principal area?
I think, you know, just because of the date clashes, it's impossible to do it with the same, you know, group of people. Obviously, from the engineering side, you know, there'll be a crossover and some people will cross over. But, you know, as far as I can see it, it's impossible. So you'll have to have two groups of people.
And two groups of drivers.
Currently, yeah, it's impossible for the drivers to do both. So, yeah, be two groups of drivers, more opportunity.
But the thing you really need to do is get the ACO and IMSA's arms up at the back to try and get no clashes.
Yeah, obviously, it makes life difficult. But, you know, I understand, you know, the TV and stuff around it, they make it hard for them to have no clashes. But, hey, 2025, who knows what the schedule will look like.
Talking about drivers, where are you with that thought process?
I have my thoughts, but I'll keep that to myself right now.
You are partnering with obviously AMPT, AMR, and they obviously have a number of highly qualified drivers, not just the race guys, but obviously they have, you know, people like at the moment, like Felipe Drugovich, people like that who are you know, test drivers. Do you think you're dropping into that pool?
I think, you know, the Aston family, as it were, you know, through customer teams, through AMR, through AMPT, through the Formula One program, there's a very large group of drivers, and obviously we'll probably look inwards first before we look outside of that group.
So the idea initially is always to start with a single car in IMSA and a single car in the WEC and a single car for Le Mans, or are you trying to run both those cars there?
You know, the interest in Le Mans is so great, I don't know if it'll be possible to run two. I think if we can, we'll try to. But until we know what the entry situation is, hard to tell.
So finally, what is the target for those initial year?
I think the first thing is, you know, you need to hit the track reliably, execute as well as you can, and see how the cards stack. But like Adam alluded to, I think this year you saw that all the cars had a good shot at least being at the front for some portion of the race. And you know, realistically, it's gonna take us a while to get to the front, but we're gonna put our best foot forward.
Ian, thank you.
Thank you.
So having spoken to Adam and Ian, it's now a chance to speak to someone who knows what they're talking about, and perhaps is a little bit less, you know, prepared to see all the hearts and flowers. Andrew Cotton, the editor of Race Car Engineering. Andrew, what's your immediate reaction to this kind of much-trailed and long-standing story?
Thank God they finally turned up, I think is probably it. I think any new manufacturer that comes is a good thing for the championship. I think that bringing a brand like Aston Martin to the World Endurance Championship is only going to be a good thing. There's massive technical challenges to getting this thing onto the grid. But I think sitting here in the new Aston Martin facility at Silverstone, you can see the level of backing that they have for the whole program. And so you're kind of a lot more confident that this can happen.
You mentioned backing. I mean, it's kind of quite grey, but how much of this is Lawrence Stroll's and Aston Martin money, and how much is Gabe and Hart of Racing's money?
Nobody's willing to go into those details, funnily enough. I don't know why. I mean, you know, Aston Martin wanted to come in 2019. They didn't. They have now committed to it. They've actually built the track car. They're going to evolve the Valkyrie from the track car. So you'd have to say there's an awful lot of Aston Martin in this. Heart of Racing are going to meet a proportion, small or large, of the running budget of the car. They're going to race in IMSA and in the WEC. So you would imagine that the budget would be quite substantial to do so. So the development cost, my guess would be the development cost would come from Aston Martin and the running cost would come from Heart of Racing. But there's going to be some crossover. To what level, we don't know.
I mean, that's evidenced perhaps by the fact it was just Heart of Racing. They probably say, we'll just do IMSA, but Aston got, now we've got to do WEC as well.
I think there's a lot to be said for doing both programmes. You've got to race globally. If you've got a car like the Valkyrie, why wouldn't you race it globally? And you know, if Heart of Racing come to Aston Martin and say, well, we're only going to do IMSA, Aston Martin going to say, no, you're not. So I could see that there would be an advantage to both doing the global championship and the American championship. And actually, having a LMH car running in IMSA, we haven't got one of those yet, so it's going to be possibly the first one. Certainly the first one that's going to be homologated for it by IMSA. So that's going to be an interesting process in itself.
Yeah, there's a lot of glossing over saying, no, it'll be the same car. It'll be the same car, yeah, but they are. I think people don't really realise it's two completely different homologation teams, isn't it, who sort out for IMSA and for WEC. I mean, you know for a fact that Porsche, for example, has different bodywork in different championships. So this might not be the work of a moment.
It's not going to be the work of a moment. There aren't massive changes, but there are changes. Differences in interpretations, differences in wind tunnels, different in technological, you know, answers to various questions. So, yes, there's going to be changes. It's not going to be massive hardware changes, but there are going to be differences between the two. IMSA and the WEC are working together. The technical teams are working together, and often you see them collaborating. They're very careful to protect that. So I think they're going to get information from one, they're going to pass it on to the other, whichever way that goes. So there will be similarities. They're going to keep the differences to the smallest division that they can. The problem is, you're racing on different circuits, different track surfaces, you're racing on different altitudes, you're racing in different conditions all around. I mean, the car is going to have to perform differently depending on whether you're in IMSA or in the WEC anyway. So the balance of performance is going to have to be has to accommodate that, and that's not going to be easy.
And coming as a non-hybrid, that's not the message either championship wants to give out. It's all about, woohoo, we're green, you know, we're all hybrid. Now, my Machiavellian mind says that they don't want to see a non-hybrid car win because all the manufacturers go, well, why are we carrying around this 100 kilograms of nothing then?
Yeah, you're forgetting the fuel. So, you know, there is an environmental message that's going on anyway in the World Endurance Championship. My message is always, you know, lightweight is better. Lightweight non-hybrid is as good as heavyweight hybrid, probably in my book, better and more fun. So, you know, there's a lot to be said about coming with a non-hybrid. Whether you get the fuel efficiency, well, that's kind of balanced out anyway. So, you know, gloss over that bit. But then the hybrid isn't used for fuel efficiency anyway. So let's not, you know. It's too complicated just to say hybrid is green and non-hybrid is not green, because there are things that you can do in many areas of the car to make it more environmentally friendly, and I'm sure they're going to be looking at that.
Now, as the editor of Race Car Engineering, you've seen many projects come and many projects go. How big is the challenge of turning a road car, a supercar, but a road car, into a race car?
Pretty massive. I mean, if you start with a prototype and you start with a, you know, blank sheet of paper, you can do whatever you like. That brings its own challenges because you then have no idea what you're going to build. And Ferrari have been quite open about that. They said when we started, we had literally nothing except a set of regulations, and then you have to go and investigate into each one. When you start with a road car, don't forget the Aston Martin already announced they were coming in 2019. They then developed the road car. Then out of that road car, they developed a track car, and out of that track car, they developed this. So they're saying, the official line is, there's not a huge differentiation between the 2019 car and this one. They're going to take an awful lot of learning, but they're still going to have to take the spine of the car and chunk most of the aero in the bin anyway. So they've basically admitted that bit, because the differences in the regulations are so big between what you need for a road car to what you need for a racing car. So they're going to have to make huge changes whatever you do. So I think starting from a road car, but it was designed as a race car, but then it was a road car, but it isn't. Yeah. Make of that what you want.
And up against a number of very well-developed full works entries. We haven't got this grey area about customer racing. They are full works entries. I mean, it seems to me it's lovely, it's romantic, it's fantastic. It's Aston Martin, but it's a bit of an uphill struggle.
I think it's going to be an uphill struggle for everybody. I mean, even Porsche Penske Motorsport have proven that sometimes you can make mistakes and forget to put fuel in the car. So, you know, everybody's going to make their mistakes. You know, I just spoke to the team here, and they said to beat the car on track, if you assume that the balance of performance is completely accurate, you have to be better than Toyota or Penske or Ganassi. You know, these are big names. And so for a team, it's a huge development, as well as from a car perspective, it's a huge huge challenge, and everybody's got to step up to it. I don't expect them to be challenging for race wins from year one, but I also do expect them to be competitive, because that's what balance of performance is supposed to be, and I think they've got an excellent chance of doing so.
Great stuff. Thank you, Andrew. So Andrew Cotton there with his opinion on this new Aston Martin project. It's very impressive, it's very challenging, but there was a lovely buffet. That's Nick's Day Out.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.